Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
Monday edition, it's Christmas week. Hope you're settling in. Not a lot of people on the roads this morning, so maybe an indication that people are taking the week off here with the midweek holiday. And warmer than average temperatures, of course. We'll detail that coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. I had my wisdom teeth pulled on Thursday, so I was gone a little bit last week. I did send you and Gina a little video when I was packed with gauze and just a little loopy afterwards.
Looked like Chubby Bunny. Do you remember that, playing that as a kid in high school when you had to stuff as many marshmallows in your mouth as you could?
Yes.
Kind of had that look going.
Yeah. Well, even when I took the gauze out, I kind of felt like I had that look going for the better part of 6 or 7 hours and was all numbed up. But yes, I'm almost 50 years old and I had my wisdom teeth taken out like a good little boy.
It happens.
12:10 here on WTMJ. Some big stories that we're following here into the afternoon.
It's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Records could be shattered this holiday season. Millions of people are hitting the road or taking to the skies to get to their holiday destinations. ABC's Matt Rivers is on the tarmac at LaGuardia Airport in New York.
More than 122 million Americans set to travel more than 50 miles from home this year. That is going to be a record, not just in these days, but also in the days after Christmas. We're going to be looking at these busy days for a while now. And just as a reminder, when you're getting on the roads, obviously you get to the airports early. When you're getting on the roads, the worst times to drive between 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. each day.
How about some good news when it comes to traveling?
Give
I just gave
me.
You some bad news on the roads because we do have some crashes and on top of that in our construction zones. However, I just took a peek at Mitchell International Airport in Milwaukee for you here. If you are flying out right now, it is looking good. Arrivals and departures, I didn't see any cancellations, no delays either. Either they're going in, they're coming in, going out on time. Already departed. It's looking good so far.
May not need to use the de-icer this weekend either, or this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to warm up.
Number two, win and they're in. Despite a heartbreaking overtime loss to the Bears Saturday night in Chicago, the Packers are one win away from securing a playoff berth. Green Bay takes on the Baltimore Ravens Saturday night, what'll be likely the final home game of the season before finishing up on the road against the Vikings the following week. Here's the story to follow. Quarterback situation. Major storyline this week for the Packers and the Ravens, for that matter. Jordan Love remains in concussion protocol.
That's always a tough one to navigate. There's a lot of steps to getting through that. But I do think, just my conversations with people, I have not specifically talked to him today, but it sounded like he was doing better.
Meanwhile, backup Malik Willis dealing with a shoulder injury that could limit his practice time this week. But if he's called upon to start, Matt LaFleur feels confident Willis can lead the team to a win.
I think he's done a hell of a job. I think we've all seen it, right? I mean, when he's gone in there, we've been able to move the football. We've won games with him as a starter, so we've got a ton of confidence in him and his ability to go in there and win a game if need be.
Ravens are 7-8, but still in the playoff hunt despite losing to the Patriots Sunday afternoon. So what if Willis can't go and Love can't go?
That's crazy.
There is a guy that nobody's heard of on the practice squad. And then there's always these emergency quarterbacks on the roster, but it's kind of a mystery. Like, who's your emergency quarterback if you don't have a healthy quarterback on the active roster for a game? And apparently in Green Bay, it's running back Josh Jacobs and wide receiver Jaden Reed.
Well, and so that's what LaFleur said, but it's like, is that real? Could that really happen?
Yes.
Or do you think they're going to pluck somebody from somewhere else?
Well, the thing is, on game day, you would never have a quarterback from the practice squad active, right? You rarely take three quarterbacks into a game day situation. So emergency is around if you got no healthy bodies who are on the active roster. But hopefully that is not the case here. And you know, these guys were able to practice a little bit this week. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson, a former MVP, he's got a back issue. He left yesterday's game against New England. So it'll be a Saturday night contest at Lambeau Field.
Hopefully it's not an emergency. Yeah. Emergency Packers service. See, I just changed it a little bit. Yeah. Well, whether you do your spending in a physical store or online, time is running out to finish your Christmas shopping. So just how many procrastinators are out there? ABC's Jim Ryan has the answer.
A poll from SurveyMonkey finds that 1 in 5 Americans will hold off on holiday shopping until the last minute. The National Retail Federation puts the average spend at $890 per person, a slight decline from last year. But factor in inflation, the NRF anticipates the first $1 trillion holiday shopping season in history.
Woo, trillion. Shoo. Well, is it too late to save? Jim will join us at 1:15 to detail any last-minute deals out there and explain what's going to cost you more for waiting so long.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that trillion is spent between the 22nd and 25th. I'd be very curious to see a breakdown of that. 12:15 on WTMJ, our Economic Business Spotlight coming up with Tim Sheehy, sponsored by Horicon Bank, the natural choice, doing banking differently since 1896. Check out horiconbank.com. On a Monday, our time to check in with MMAC Senior Advisor. It's Tim Sheehy this week of Christmas. Hi, Tim.
How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for joining us here. Hey, wanted to talk about Milwaukee. It's been seen as a place that would be great for young entrepreneurs. It's a pretty diverse landscape, a lot of colleges and universities, great opportunities to maybe build and grow a business. But some interesting information regarding Milwaukee as a startup community. What are we seeing here?
Yeah, you know, I think it's Milwaukee doesn't have a great reputation as a startup community where kind of entrepreneurs meet funding. But I think one of the biggest untold stories in Milwaukee is an organization called Generator, G-E-N-E-R-8-T-O-R, Generator. And what they do is they bring a cohort of people who are interested in starting companies together. They mentor them. Then they invest selectively in those that they think have a real shot. And then most importantly, they track the outcomes. And so if you look at Generator, which was founded by Joe Kurgis and Troy Vossler, they've invested in, or they've mentored more than 2,000 startups that have attracted about $3 billion in funding. Now, they're not all from Milwaukee, but I was reading this week, Forbes comes out every year with its annual 30 under 30, and 10 of those were startups that were invested in by Generator. So while we may not be well known for it, I think we have some great organizations like Generator and Dana Guthrie's Gateway Capital Corp that give us some legs in the future here.
Now that you say that, I'm thinking back. I can't remember the name of the startup, but we had the local team on here. Greg, do you remember this? It was a startup here in Milwaukee. The company was basically pairing up people who would like to get a couple more hours in the service industry with, say, restaurants that need it. So it was like the restaurant would put out, we need somebody from this time to this time on this day. And then you have a waitress or somebody else, a hostess over here looking for more hours, and it would pair them up. I thought it was a great idea. You're helping two different people. Tim, what would it take for the region to attract more startups and venture funding?
Well, I think the awareness of what's here in the local market and what's going on. Chris Abley started a program here that's based out of a process that MIT developed where they bring in kind of people that have been through a startup process and as a group kind of mentor people coming in. So it's I think, greater awareness of the kinds of resources that are here and the fact that there are people that have successfully done this. The thing that I like so much about Generator is they're very transparent. They track exactly what's happening. So oftentimes young entrepreneurs get in a group and you're not really sure, or they're involved with an organization and they're not really sure of its track record. Generator is very transparent with it. And I think more of that will help entrepreneurs and help Milwaukee.
Hey, Tim, how does the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation work into this? How do they assist?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have programs like this. Just personally, WEDC does a great job, but I'm always a bit skeptical if we've got to turn to government to make a decision about which companies to invest in. And I'd rather see us do this through organizations like Generator that have a proven track record and are putting kind of their own skin in the game.
Okay, Tim, we've got to ask you, because we just did a story about procrastinators and holiday shopping. There's a poll from SurveyMonkey that finds 1 in 5 Americans hold off on holiday shopping until the last minute. Is that you or no?
You know, I kind of default my shopping to other people in the family. But I think the story here is, you know, broader than just what I do. It, much like the, I guess, the NFL and the NBA, the Christmas shopping season is now expanded literally from the summer all the way through January. You know, more people are buying online. You know, Black Friday is a part of that, but they're spreading that purchasing over a much longer period of time, which is really, you know, which is a growing trend, I guess.
It is interesting. We were talking about how many, you know, $1 trillion being spent. I want to see a breakdown. How many of those that $1 trillion is spent between 22nd of December and the 25th of December? I'd be very curious to see that. Hey, I want to talk about home sales here. Down significantly in most big markets across the country. Metro Milwaukee, we've seen quite an increase here in the median home price, upwards of $437,000. Inventory still appears to be pretty tight, Tim. I don't know what the outlook for 2026 looks like here, but it's a kind of a challenging time here in southeastern Wisconsin. What's behind it?
Yeah, sure. There are a number of factors. You know, one is, as you mentioned, home prices are up, home insurance costs are up, and property taxes are up. But I think one of the biggest impacts on, you know, new home sales is what everybody calls the lock-in effect. And the lock-in effect really goes to the mortgages that people hold. Across the U.S., I think there are roughly like 30 million households, and 54% of them still have mortgage rates below 4%. So it's hard for people to, you know, want to move off of that really low cost of funds for their home. And now with rates even, still above 6%, it's hard for people to move out of that. And, you know, I think of my own example, I think we refinanced in 2020. Now we're out of the home, but we had a rate around 2.75. And it's really hard, yeah, you know, to move off that rate. And I think that's what we're seeing.
I have to admit, I saw all these reports about property tax bills. They were mailed out and people were talking about how much they had increased. And I thought, oh, I don't want to see mine because mine has gone up and up and up. And I mean, I live in Milwaukee, in downtown Milwaukee. Property taxes are high. So it was funny. I went down to go get the mail and I said to one of my neighbors, I said, oh, gosh, I almost don't want to go in and get it. She goes, actually, well, ours went down and so did the neighbors. I said, oh, keep my fingers crossed. And so I will admit mine went down this year just a little bit, like $200. But hey, I'll take it. I think that's great. That was not the case for everybody. A lot of people's went up. I'm curious. You mentioned property taxes. Home prices are high. All of these different factors. As we look to next year, what do you think the housing market's going to look like?
Yeah, I know it's an interesting question. And, you know, as mortgage rates continue to come down, I think it will help unlock some of the housing that's kind of sitting off the market in this lock-in effect. But, you know, to your point, when you go look at your property tax bill, Wisconsin has a uniformity clause, so they have to tax property the same across the board. And the real question is, as the value of your house rises, if it rises the same as everybody else, your property taxes most likely won't go up. Other property that goes up even higher, relatively, their property taxes go up and it can actually reduce yours. So what we want to continue to see is a healthy economy and a healthy environment where the values go up, so everybody's sharing the cost of those expenditures that are funded by the property tax.
Always good to check in with Tim Sheehy, senior advisor to the MMAC, and off next week. So Tim, we'll say Merry Christmas and the happiest of New Year's to you, and we'll look forward to connecting in the new year.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you both. And a quick shout out to UW River Falls, which is playing in the D3 title game after averaging 48 points a game in the last four playoff games. So go, ooh, UW River Falls.
Yeah, I love that. Another strong power from the WIAC. Good stuff, Tim. We'll talk soon.
You bet.
You know, one of the many people we're so grateful to have a part of this program each and every week. So groundbreaking is underway for the massive Vantage Data Center's Lighthouse Project in Port Washington. Been talking about this for several months. $15 billion investment. Massive. And it will, among other things, go toward the construction on this 672-acre site. But Vantage Data Centers is also pledging $3 million to the Lakeshore Natural Resource Partnership. And the goal here is to restore a 1.8-mile stretch of the Valley Creek Corridor in Port Washington. They're trying to improve aquatic habitats and also expand recreation opportunities. Emily Backus is the sustainability director from Vantage. And Emily, as we welcome into the show, I know you're out in Denver, but I noted the 414 area code that our producer Gina called, linking you to the state of Wisconsin, unless you've moved here already from Denver. Boy, that'd be fast.
No, I haven't moved, although I've been visiting quite a bit. I was actually born and raised in Milwaukee. I'm at least fourth generation Wisconsinite. So I grew up listening to your station, and I'm really thrilled to be on the show.
Oh, we absolutely love that. Well, you're talking about an important topic right now. We've heard a lot about water positivity around these data centers. For our fans, can you explain what water positivity actually means and how it will be measured?
Yeah, absolutely. So our goal of water positivity means we are committed to restoring and improving more water in Wisconsin than we use each year, and supporting the Valley Creek Corridor restoration and other water-related projects contributes to achieving that goal. But really, achieving water positivity starts with minimizing our water use. So by using a closed-loop cooling system, the Lighthouse campus will use about the same amount of water as just 65 homes. And all of that water will come from Port Washington's municipal water system. And then we'll keep a very close track of how much water we're using, measure that, and then make sure we are appropriately investing to achieve water positivity each year.
So the investment into this Lakeshore Natural Resource Partnership, it's part of a 1.8, nearly 2 mile stretch of the Valley Creek Corridor. And as I read through here, it does indicate the goal is to improve aquatic habitats and expand recreation opportunities. Can you speak to what specific restoration activities that the funding will support?
Yeah, absolutely. So our $3 million donation supports the construction costs of the restoration. So there are a number of different activities that are going to be involved in this restoration, including removing debris from the stream, stabilizing the banks to reduce erosion and make the stream cleaner for aquatic species. And very importantly, it's going to provide flood control benefits for the city of Port Washington, which has experienced several very significant floods in the past 10 years.
I was going to ask a little bit more. I think we have some fans who know exactly what Valley Creek is and other people who have absolutely no idea. Can you give us a little history of Valley Creek? Because this is nearly 2 miles of an urban stream.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? It's almost hidden right now. There aren't any direct trails right along the creek. And so even people in Port Washington might not notice it, even if they're very close to it. And so the creek has, of course, been there for a very long time and has undergone changes as the city has undergone changes over the years. But really, over time, it has cut a very deep channel, and really just with all of the erosion, not functioned as well as it should. And so the restoration, in addition to both that flood control and the improvement for aquatic species, the project partners, which are the city and Lakeshore Natural Resources Partnership, are also going to provide more access to the creek. There will be more native species planted. It'll be much more visible and accessible for the residents of Port Washington.
So Emily, Vantage is donating $3 million for the construction of this project and to get everything up and running and improve aquatic habitats and also recreation opportunities. But once it's complete, how are these investments maintained long term? Who takes control of that?
So the entire corridor is city property. So it's owned by the city of Port Washington, and the city is planning for the ongoing maintenance of the creek corridor.
Is that then too, would it be the city holding your group accountable? Because I think, especially when it comes to data centers and everything that's going on right now, we do have a lot of people who are skeptical. So who's watching this and holding you accountable? Is it the city, environmental groups, independent experts?
In terms of the Valley Creek Corridor project, this is not something that Vantage is constructing. We've given this $3 million freely for the project partners, Lakeshore Natural Resource Partnership and the city, to use in the most constructive way possible to do the improvements that are being designed right now. So that $3 million will go to the highest and best use as LNRP and the city see fit.
So, Emily, at what point does Vantage connect with leadership in Port Washington to identify a project like this?
Yeah. So this is something we identified very early on, really, when we were still looking at the property that would become the Lighthouse Data Center campus. And we connected with city officials and asked, what are the ongoing environmental projects or concerns that you're seeing in the area? And the Valley Creek Corridor project was one that they told us about pretty quickly. And I went out to visit and took a tour of the area. And it was very easy to see that the benefits to the residents and the environment was enough to convince us that supporting it was a really important effort.
I think you have a lot of people clapping their hands saying that's great. Vantage Data Center is pledging $3 million to support the Valley Creek Corridor revitalization project in Port Washington. They love it. But you have the skeptics, too. So what do you say to those community members who believe that the data project will be a strain on environmental resources?
I'd invite them to learn more about our efforts. We're working really hard to make this campus a model of sustainable data center development, not only by investing in local projects like the Valley Creek Corridor restoration, but also by supporting the development of new clean energy resources in Wisconsin, restoring native landscapes on our campus, and many other activities. And they can learn more. We do have a dedicated website for the campus, vantagedclighthousecampus.com.
So, Emily, when does this project begin? We know the data center is underway, groundbreaking, ceremonial event, and so on. When does this project get up and running, and when might it be complete?
Yeah, so the Valley Creek Corridor project is still undergoing engineering and design. So the construction kickoff won't be starting until likely the end of next year, and it'll be a multi-year construction project to get everything complete.
Well, really interesting information and exciting times for the folks at Vantage who are now breaking ground here in their AI data center in Port Washington. Emily Backus, Milwaukee native sustainability director for Vantage, joining us here on the program. Emily, thanks for the insight and information. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Emily Backus from Vantage in Port Washington. 1246 here on WTMJ, Wisconsin's Midday News podcast is built by Siding Unlimited. Sign up and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us here at Wisconsin's Midday News.
So a really disturbing story just coming down from CBS right now. There is a judge at this very moment in Colorado considering new plea agreements for two former funeral home owners accused of stashing nearly 190 decaying bodies.
Oh, God.
And that's not it, Greg. That's just one part of it. Also accused of giving families fake ashes. How infuriating is this? CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula has been following the story. He's got our update today.
The previous agreements for Kerry and John Holford were rejected earlier this year. The latest agreements proposed 30 to 50 years for John Holford and 25 to 35 years for Kerry. But family members of the deceased say the punishments are too lenient and want the cases to go to trial.
Yeah, so there's this one woman whose son's body was among those found at the funeral home. She says this case is not about convenience or efficiency. It is about human beings who were treated as disposable. Mm. She went on to say accepting a plea agreement sends a message that this level of abuse is negotiable. We reject that message. I cannot imagine being these families. The Holfords in this case pleaded guilty to 191 counts of corpse abuse. Investigators found bodies in a bug-infested building back in 2023.
I'm trying to figure out the motivation behind it. What's the idea? What are you doing? Are there costs associated with cremation that you just don't want to incur? So you stash the body somewhere else and come up with your own idea for fake ashes? I have no idea what would prompt somebody to do this.
Yeah, I was just looking into some more of these details here. Investigators have described finding the bodies back in 2023 stacked atop each other in that bug-infested building in Penrose. That's a small town. It's about a two-hour drive south of Denver. They say the scene was just horrific, with bodies stacked atop each other in various states of decay, some having been there for 4 years. Mm. Now, Colorado is actually known, or at least it was at one point, known not to have very good laws regarding funeral homes. I think that is in the midst of changing, at least. Some of these cases have triggered reforms, including routine inspections. Yeah, you would think, gosh, routine inspections. Yes, please. I feel for those families, though. That's just horrendous.
I don't know what I would do in that situation if I was a family member who found out. But I would certainly not be happy. That is unbelievable.
Well, and just think, you have fake ashes. I mean, some people display the ashes in an urn.
Sure.
And, you know, talk to their family members or look at it and think about the memories. And then just to know all of a sudden what you're looking at in that urn is not your family member is just so disturbing. I remember this past year when my dog passed away, and I remember thinking, like, how do they keep track? Like, okay, when my poor pup goes and leaves me, like, how do I know that I'm getting him back? I guess that was probably the newsy in me. And so we did ask some questions and to make sure that the process and how they do the tracking and everything was right. And it's just so sad.
Yeah. More uplifting story here. I did not know you could do this. Doctors in Dallas saved two lives with one donated organ. I didn't know you could split an organ to save multiple lives, but it happened.
In the rare split liver transplant at Children's Health Medical Center, most of the liver went to a 53-year-old woman. A small portion went to Luna Cifuentes, who had been on the transplant list since she was born. After the surgery, her mother, Ashton, noticed an immediate difference.
As soon as she got back, it was like a switch went off. She wanted to eat pizza.
Samuel is Luna's father.
And man, I am so grateful and for the family that made that hard decision.
It's our blessing that they live on through Luna.
Michael Wallace, CBS News.
I was today years old when I realized you could split a liver and have two people receive one organ and thrive after receiving it. Unbelievable. Are you kidding me?
Gotta love that. And thanks to all our organ donors. Wisconsin trying to get even more organ donors.
One way to do it, I suppose. You can get two with one. Pretty amazing stuff. Hey, we are on until 3 o'clock this afternoon. A lot of stuff coming up here in the 1 o'clock hour. Got to check in with Niz, too, about the weather that we've got going on here. I didn't think we'd get back into the mid-40s here by the end of the year, but it's certainly going to be the case as we get some warmer-than-average temperatures after that bitter cold from a little over a week ago. And we'll get with him coming up at about 1:35. Little pack yak as well, more like pack yuck given the situation on Saturday night.
Heartbreak.
But very possible the Packers and Bears could see each other in the postseason in Chicago. I don't think any Packers fan is afraid of the Bears. Green Bay outplayed them 6 out of the 8 quarters played, but one quarter really did the Packers in, plus a little overtime. Self-inflicted wounds for the Packers on Saturday night.
It was
night.
Looking so good. I feel like we were winning that game for most of the game until
we
didn't.
It was absolutely the case. Kind of dominating at points, too.
It was loud, too.
So we'll get to a little Packers discussion, and the week of practice begins on Tuesday here for the Packers. Another Saturday matchup and the final home game, likely, of the regular season on Saturday against the Baltimore Ravens.